on the Davidson Sports Network. The Bob McKillop Show is on the air, powered by Ortho Carolina. The Bob McKillop Show is brought to you by Bearings, Innovative Strategies and Solutions, Pepsi, born in the Carolinas, Atrium Health, make every day the best day yet, and by Ortho Carolina, you improved. Now, here's the voice of Davidson basketball, Jared Letch, joining head coach Bob McKillop.
Welcome inside the Vance Athletic Center on the campus of Davidson College. This is the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina. Alongside head coach Bob McKillop, I'm Jared Letch as we dive into a variety of topics as usual. And, coach, let's jump into the past week of the Atlantic 10 play for the Wildcats and start with a look back at last Wednesday. What was a grueling, hard-fought four-overtime loss to George Washington last Wednesday night, 107-104. How do you describe the output of energy, both physical and mental, in that game?
You know, George Washington's a very good team. They've put together a group of new recruits with some veterans, and they really are playing very well. And when we went up there on Wednesday, they had come off two very good wins, and it was a hard-fought game the entire game. And we had an opportunity to win in regulation. We didn't. We came to the bench, and usually when you're on the road and you lose an opportunity to win a game and go into overtime, there's a tremendous letdown. Not for us. We came back out, got the lead again, had another opportunity to win in first overtime. And again, the same situation. You go to the bench, and there's a deflation because of the loss of the opportunity to win, and you're on the road. And we did it three times after the regulation. So I was really using that as sort of a growing experience for our guys to be able to respond emotionally to the setbacks and the letdowns and the disappointments of not closing out the game.
In those end-of-game situations, Coach, talk about the thinking process, the play calling, when you have a chance to win a game on a final possession.
You try to make it as simplistic as possible, and you try to put the ball in the hands of somebody who has a history of making plays, and that's what we did. And George Washington did a very, very good job of locking in defensively, and we just put ourselves in a position where we had to play that last possession. I think there were opportunities throughout those overtimes where we could have built upon the lead, and we could have extended the lead so it didn't come down to a final possession.
And, Coach, free throws in that game were in short supply, I think just 7 of 14 in regulation. But as a game like that goes on, how difficult does it get to step to the line and make those shots?
Well, a big challenge is always your energy and your stamina. And when you play the minutes that you played and you have to fight the way you fought, you don't have the same lift in your free throw. And you can emphasize that. And when your guys start thinking about the free throw and the need for energy into your shot, it starts to immediately play into the repeated automatic mentality that we have at the foul line. And you know, George Washington also scored a lot of baskets under 10 seconds. I don't know the exact number, but they made us defend for 20, 25 seconds. And as a result, that wears you out on the defensive end as well as the amount of cutting we had to do on the offensive end.
I can imagine the effort being the key positive in that game. What else did you take away? And you mentioned the experience of end-of-game situations. Was that another one?
Certainly every aspect of the game you're going to reevaluate, you're going to look at what could we have done different. I'm sure Kyle Shanahan is thinking right now, what could he have done different at the end of that first half? Any coach does that, any staff does that, any player does that. And we reviewed it with a fine-tooth comb. We checked everything out. We worked on some things on Thursday, Friday. And it's so difficult in middle of a season to take a game like that and work specifically on things that you need to work on as a result of that experience while neglecting what you have to do with the following opponent. So it's a fine balance between the amount of time you can have on the court to work on things that you need work on, but yet still prepare for your upcoming opponent.
Now, Coach, moving on to Saturday, dominant 85-50 victory inside Belk Arena that really featured a dynamic offensive performance, 72% shooting from the floor, but you were able to combine that with an equally strong defensive effort.
what happened on Saturday was contagious. We made shots, and that was contagious to make more shots. We shot layups on some cuts, and that became contagious to make more cuts. And then we transferred that into the defensive end. We didn't carry a missed shot or a missed cue on passing the ball into the defensive end. We maintained our sense of living in the present moment, fighting for each possession, playing one possession at a time. And, you know, I think we only missed maybe eight shots the entire game, which is absolutely extraordinary. And when you get the other team having to take the ball through the net as consistently as we did, it immediately eliminates some of their scoring opportunities because they're not getting those transition baskets that has been a bugaboo for anybody, you know, on a defensive end.
Now, coming off a 60-minute game on Wednesday, talk about the importance of trainer Justin King and the staff inside the training room getting guys ready to go on Saturday night.
Justin King spends an extraordinary amount of time caring for our guys, and the word care is really a big part of what he does. He's very sensitive to every aspect of their health, emotionally, physically. He puts in extraordinary hours, and he feels as if he's a member of our coaching staff, and we feel the same way, and our players feel the same way. He's sensational.
So looking at Lee for a moment, how has he come in so quickly and learned really the nuances of this offense? He seems to make cuts off the ball with great purpose, aggression, and that's led to several layups during the course of the year.
Genetics. You know, his dad was a coach and taught him so very well. His mom was a silver medal winner in the Los Angeles Olympics in 1984. So he's grown up in a household where he had an opportunity to be exposed to basketball at an early age and on a consistent basis, day in and day out, learning from his mom, learning from his dad. And it really shows he's got a sensational IQ.
Now, with the evolution of this roster, Coach, the things that have happened in the rearview mirror now, but how has that affected leadership and chemistry? Have you seen that change and evolve as well?
It has challenged our guys to step forward even more as leaders because the emotional drain that the roster change created mandated that the seniors, the juniors, become even more of a leader than they had been. They really needed to get these guys together even more so. And because so many roles had to change because of the adjustment in the roster, someone has to encourage those guys to play those new roles. Obviously, the coaching staff is doing that, but in the dormitory rooms, in the cafeteria, in the locker room, someone has to be reinforcing that, and that's our leaders. And they have been very encouraging, and it's really made them mature quite a bit as well.
One other point to touch on, Coach. Lucas seemed to have a lot of success in that game Saturday on screen and roll, getting easy buckets around the rim. I know that's something you guys have worked on throughout the course of the year.
Well, it's a two-man dance. It's not just Luka catching the ball or running to the rim. It's the quarterback, whether it be John Kellen or Carter or Malcolm, handling the ball the right way, holding on to it at the precise time, releasing it, and finding with a good pass. And I thought they did a superb job of that. And I told John actually yesterday when I saw him, I said, John, that's the best use of the ball screen you've had since you've been here at Davidson.
Well, that'll take us into our first break. When we come back, we'll get a little blast from the past with Coach, as well as discuss the development of such a strong culture and hit some fan questions. This is the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina. Jared Latch, Bob McKillop with you. And, Coach, in this next segment, let's have a little fun with these questions as we go back a little ways to your teaching history at Holy Trinity High School. I want to ask you about what were your most passionate about or favorite topics with your students?
Current events. I had the ninth grade class of Afro-Asian studies, which was a mandated course in the New York State's region's curriculum. And I taught Western civilization from the Greeks right through the Vietnam War. And then I eventually taught a course called Sport and American Society, which paralleled the way sport is a mirror of society. That was a senior elective. But those other two classes, ninth grade Afro-Asian studies and Western civilization, were real challenges to prepare for. Let me tell you. You know, what was interesting about Afro-Asian studies, the map changed every year. So Tanganyika went to Tanzania, Rhodesia went to Zimbabwe, and the changing maps really was very confusing for students, because we see today, so many kids today have no idea about geography. And back then it was even more challenging because it changed so dramatically.
Those courses sound like weighty subjects regardless. Was there any similarity between your teaching style in the classroom and your coaching style on the court?
You had to prepare, and you had to be detailed in your preparation. I think that's the greatest lesson that I learned from being in a classroom. You figure this, there's 40, 45, 14, 15-year-old kids, and you're speaking to them about the Industrial Revolution. That's a real challenge. So somehow you had to parallel the Industrial Revolution with what was going on in their own world. And you did the same thing with Afro-Asian studies. Now, that was a little bit more applicable to contemporary times, because what was taught in the curriculum there was much more of a modern approach to it. But it really mandated the use of details and get them attentive to details. I'll never forget saying this, to remind our students what the capital at this time of India was. It was New Delhi. So, of course, New York is famous for its delis, and all of these students, and Matt Daugherty to this day remembers the capital of India because of the word Delhi.
And that's a perfect segue, because we're going to talk about Matt Daugherty here. After a year at Davidson as an assistant, you went back to New York at Long Island Lutheran, and Matt Daugherty, you coached him. He was a high school All-American, lives local here to Davidson, attends games on occasion. What was he like as a player, and what role did you play in his college recruitment?
He started for us as a freshman at Holy Trinity and then as a sophomore at Holy Trinity, and was destined for stardom. Leaving after his sophomore year to come to Davidson as an assistant coach was a very difficult experience for me because of the kinship that we had developed. And he becomes the All-American that we expected him to become as a high school junior. And we actually recruited him here to Davidson. He and Brett Baerup, who became a very good player for Kentucky, two Long Island kids, visited Davidson in that year, 78-79, on official visits. And I think they actually came to basketball camp as well. But he wound up going to North Carolina, had an illustrious career there. Unfortunately, his opportunity to play pro basketball was shortchanged by an injury to his back. And he went to work for Ed Sockwell, who was a very prominent businessman here in Charlotte, and he coached an AAU team and was the voice of the Wildcats for I guess, a year. And, of course, when I got an opportunity to come back here as a head coach, I hired Matt, and I hired Don Hogan, who was down in Clemson with what was his name? The coach at Clemson.
Right now?
No, he's,
oh, back then?
Yeah, he's at Coastal Carolina now.
Okay.
Cliff Ellis.
There you go.
Boy, oh boy.
My age. We have the ability, though, with crowdsourcing here with a live audience to get the answer.
So anyway, Don Hogan came from Clemson. So we had a terrific staff of Don, and we had and Matt and John Corso, who has passed away since, but had also played for us here at Davidson and played for us at Holy Trinity. So three former players, and then Larry Garlow was on a previous staff, and he added to that staff. And I thought that was a terrific first staff to have, and that built the foundation to who we have become.
Now I want to ask you about Kellen and John quickly moving up the career scoring list. One player of note that Kellen is close to is Brandon Williams, a.k.a. Ozone, who started really a jump start to the program in the 90s and then went on to a long professional career, including an NBA championship with the Spurs. What are your memories of coaching Brandon? And I see
well,
you have a
there's a great memory. There's a great memory recruiting Brandon. We thought we were going to get a steal if we were going to get him. And he was playing in a summer camp, five-star camp in Coraopolis, Pennsylvania, in the summer before his senior year. And we're scared stiff that some of the big timers are going to come in and recruit him because he made the All-Star team. Unfortunately for Brandon, the point guard on the All-Star team got hurt in the first minute. So they played Brandon as a point guard in the All-Star game when all the coaches were there. And he was basically hidden. He did not produce as a point guard. He showed athleticism, but he didn't show point guard skills, and he didn't show shooting skills because he had to get rid of the ball. So he did not have a great All-Star game. And it really helped us in the recruiting process. And then I always tell a story of going to visit his family in Bastrop, Louisiana, and it was during election time period. And Matt Daugherty and I flew into, I think, Monroe or Lafayette, Louisiana, and we're driving down the road, and all these signs are out for election day. And there were Duke signs out all over Louisiana, blue Duke colors. And Matt Daugherty says, boy, I can't believe how many Duke fans are down here. And it was actually David Duke, the racist, who was actually running for governor at that time. And an interesting footnote to that, we went to an Applebee's after we visited Brandon's family, and in Applebee's they were having a rally for David Duke. And as soon as we walked in and we heard about that, Matt and I both left and went somewhere else.
Well, Coach, switching gears for a moment, I want to get one of these fan questions in that we have from Lyndon Smith. It said, did Lee's concussion have an effect on his shooting? And he seems to have recovered, though, his outside shot.
You know, it's an interesting dynamic because you always evaluate why is he not shooting as well as he normally does. And he had a lot of open looks. And was it the concussion? Was it his parents in the stands? You know, you always wonder that. Is he feeling extra pressure? Of course, mom and dad were there. And you hate to use that as a reason, but you're always wondering what happened. Concussion, mom and dad visiting for the two-week time period that they were visiting. And despite the relationship you had with your mom and dad, I know when I played and my mom and dad came, it was a little different experience than when they were not there at the game. So I can't answer that.
Hey, Coach, quickly, one more question about you. Music playlist these days. When you're traveling, working out, what are you listening to?
I listen to everything. I have a big band treadmill list. I have an Italian treadmill list. I have an oldies treadmill list. I have a pop. I have a rhythm and blues. I have a Sinatra. I have a Bocelli. I have a Streisand. I have a Pavarotti, and I love instrumentals.
So connoisseur of all music genres here for head coach Bob McKillop. We're going to take
not the contemporary music. I'm not a real contemporary fan.
So there's a clarification. It's time for another break. When we come back, we'll look ahead at the upcoming week as we preview the Wildcats' next opponent, the VCU Rams, on a national stage Friday night at the Sigel Center in Richmond as the Bob McKillop Show rolls on, powered by Ortho Carolina from Learfield IMG College. Welcome back to Davidson College. Jared Latch alongside Bob McKillop, head coach of the Wildcats. Time to look ahead at our next opponent in the VCU Rams. And VCU currently sits at 16-6, 6-3 in the A-10. They're coming off a tough night against Rhode Island and a challenging venue up there at the Ryan Center on Friday night. And, Coach, both teams, the Wildcats and the Rams, come in with about a week off.
You know, I watched that game on Friday night, and as you would expect, VCU never gave up. They were down big early, but fought back and fought back and got it in single digits. And Rhode Island has played them twice this year and beat them twice, but then you look at what VCU has done in the conference and have done throughout the season. This is a team that's been in and out of the top 25 since the beginning of the season. They knocked off LSU. They've had significant victories over conference opponents, so we know we're dealing with a very challenging game.
When you go into a game like that against their havoc pressure and into a loud environment, is that something you just have to embrace as part of that road mentality?
It's part of the process of being a college student athlete that you're going to play in incredibly exciting venues. Sometimes it'll be very adversarial, but this is what you play the game for, and this is why you practice as hard as our guys do, because playing in a place like VCU is just a sensational college basketball experience.
Now, that Rams team, they've developed a pretty good balance, a strong play underneath with Santos Silva, perimeter shooting, Dariante Jenkins, a freshman, Bones Highland, and Marcus Evans. Talk about defending that attack.
they have the inside-outside attack, which makes them lethal, and they could shoot the ball from the three very, very well, but then they can also post people up, not just Marcos Santos Silva, but they can post a number of other guys as well. And they're going to add to their offensive firepower by their terrific defense. They're going to extend the court. They're going to try to wear you down, and they thrive and really respond to a turnover. And it's not just one basket, but one turnover can lead to another turnover, can lead to another turnover. So it's, as it's been mentioned, chaos, havoc. It creates a lot of headaches for an opposing offense.
Give us a couple of your early keys to Friday night.
Without doubt, handling the basketball is going to be pivotal. Defending as a team is going to be pivotal. And then rebounding the ball is going to be pivotal. Those three things, which are kind of staples of what we do, we need to be clicking on all cylinders and very detailed in our approach to preparing for that.
Now, Coach, on a sad note, recently lost a couple of longtime fans in Dr. French and Fred Deaton.
Yeah, Dr. Bob French was such a presence in so many venues that we've been in since we've come to Davidson 31 years ago. And you could always see him. He was here usually an hour, 2.5, 3 hours before the game, walking in front of the arena, just, I guess, feeling the anxiety of the upcoming game. And you can always see his face right behind our bench. And Fred Deaton would always, he and his wife Gwen would always walk across campus every Saturday on game day, and they would stroll across the campus, reliving their own memories as from his time as a student here, and again, a presence at all of our games. So two very big losses to the Davidson alumni base and Davidson basketball community.
And on a more joyous congratulation note to our friend and colleague Gavin Viano, leaving us later this week for an AD job at Wheaton College in Boston.
Yes, and Gavin also is to be congratulated for his nuptial, which was last Saturday. He did a magnificent job for us here at Davidson. I think the Fast Break Club and I think Davidson Athletic Foundation was in great hands, and he was a big catalyst in moving that forward. And he's got big shoes. We have big shoes to fill with his departure. And I know that Chris Clooney and Brad Martin in development and Eileen Keeley in development are working very feverishly to make sure we get the best possible candidate to replace Gavin.
Well, Coach, thank you as always for your time here today.
Thanks, Jared, and thank you.
We'll take one final break and come back and wrap things up here on the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina from Learfield IMG College. Welcome back to the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina. We want to remind you, you can join us for our next broadcast coming up this Friday, 6:45 on the Davidson Radio Network as the Wildcats travel to VCU. Our next coaches show coming your way next Monday, February 10th at noon as we continue throughout A-10 play. For Bob McKillop, I'm Jared Latch. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks for joining us, and so long for now. This has been the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina from Learfield IMG College.
This has been the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina. The Bob McKillop Show has been brought to you by Bearings, Innovative Strategies and Solutions, Pepsi, born in the Carolinas, Atrium Health, make every day the best day yet, and by Ortho Carolina, you improved. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Davidson Sports Network.